Did you know you can sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. Just go to GoFundMe.com/NerdandTie and help us out. Every dollar you throw to us helps defend free speech, justice, truth, the American way, and battle pants. That's right. I said battle pants. Just go to GoFundMe.com/NerdandTie.
On this Fortnite edition of Nerd and Tie, Brian Fuller is stepping down from Star Trek Discovery as showrunner. The Flash just can't keep the director. Young Justice is making a comeback. The Dark Tower is delayed until 2017. We've got convention news and a mailbag. All of that will vomit that TV challenge on this Fortnite Nerd and Tie.
Here, this is us. We're doing stuff.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Recording on a Monday night because I was in Nebraska all weekend.
On this, the eve of election night in America.
And to be released election day morning. So if you're listening to this while in line to vote on Tuesday.
But this might be making you happy right now.
I was going to say this might be relieving some of the crippling anxiety you might be feeling.
If you're listening to this after the election, either the day has been saved or you're looking back at a fonder time before the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
When we were all innocent and cheerful.
And not.
And let us instead introduce ourselves and bring you into this bubble of joy.
Before the Dark Ages, before the First Order. All right. Yes, that is.
Introduce us, Nick.
Keeping us together, hoping to take us back to that happier time before the anxiety-ridden election day is the indescribable Trey Dorn.
I'm very describable. People have used all kind of words to describe me.
And that's just in the last couple of hours.
Some of them we can't use on this show.
Ah, Facebook.
And reminding us of the existential dread that faces us the ones recording at the day that awaits us tomorrow is Professor Fur.
Hyper. Just dead silence.
Yeah.
You there, Fur?
Here. My mic got unplugged, but I'm here.
Okay, so Fur's still
here.
He's
so existential, dreadful that he unplugged his mic, everyone.
That's a good metaphor for how things have gone, actually.
You know, a smart man just has more than one microphone. See, now I'm on this microphone. Now I'm on this microphone.
I'm
on two microphones. and
wow.
Since we released this as a mono MP3, that made absolutely no difference to the listeners at home. But, you know.
And meanwhile, here I am, not bringing up sad things and recording from only one mic. I am Nick Izumi.
Hi, Nick.
Get your mic working for.
You sound echoey.
Well, that's because he's still using his onboard laptop mic until he,
gets
Skype to switch to the nice microphone, the Nerd and Tie microphone.
The microphone that I always use.
Yeah, you're still on the laptop mic. While Fur fixes that, though, why don't we go to our first story, Nick?
Yeah, let's look at some news.
There we go.
Just this last Tuesday, of course, it's been a fun time to be a Star Trek fan again. Just this last Tuesday, Star Trek Beyond came out on Blu-ray. But in the meantime, it hasn't been as fun to be a Star Trek fan when it was announced that Brian Fuller is stepping down as the showrunner for Star Trek Discovery. And, oh no, all holy hell has broken loose. There is no hope for Star Trek Discovery. It's all over. Brian Fuller left. Stop. Stop. I've seen a bit of this. It needs to stop. It is true. Brian Fuller is stepping down from Star Trek Discovery. But we all need to take a break and look at where he's actually at. A lot of his usual suspects, his stable of writers who are on board with him for projects like Pushing Daisies, are still working on Discovery. Fuller just has a really big he's got a really big course load now, you guys.
Yes.
He's got a full plate.
Yeah, the new showrunners are two people who worked with him on Pushing Daisies, and the whole reason he's stepping down is just because he doesn't have enough time to do Discovery while he's doing American Gods and Amazing Stories for NBC.
Yeah, he's just doing the reasonable human thing and not biting off more than he can chew.
Yeah, and he's not leaving Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
He's still going to be on the writing staff and still a producer on the show. It's just he's handing the day-to-day showrunner duties over to other people who he handpicked. This isn't a I've been replaced by the network situation. This is a he is handing it off to his handpicked success. It's like more when Joss Whedon left Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
and handed the reins to Jed and Marissa Tankorin. God, I hope I said her name right. This is not a bad thing. And when things calm down for him, he will come back to take over Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot on his plate. I mean, that's I'd hate to see what Brian Fuller, like, when he's focused, some of his work is some of the best out there. I do not want to see Brian Fuller in a situation where he's too stretched out.
Yeah,
in the meanwhile,
like
we should
really
all just go watch. In the meanwhile, we should all just watch the DVDs of Wonderfalls that we all have.
We do. I mean, totally have.
I actually genuinely have Wonderfalls on DVD.
I do not.
You should get it. It's really good.
I would love to, but that is not a great idea for me right now.
Go steal a copy. Like, find someone who has it and punch them in the face and take theirs.
That seems rude and terrible.
But then you'll have Wonderfalls.
We're not in the Mad Max future yet. Just hopefully we won't be soon. I don't know. I just it was another one of those times where it was news that could be taken as bad, and of course, knowing nerddom, some people just lost their minds right away. You know, it's all over. There's no hope for Star Trek. Don't worry, you guys.
It's terrible. Rabble, rabble, rabble.
Exactly. Don't worry, guys. It's still in good hands. Star Trek Discovery still has just as much potential to be awesome as it did before.
Let's take down CBS. I've got a hammer. I really wish we were still working a video, because I actually do have a hammer in my hand right now.
Dear God.
That's really strange. Why do you have that?
Because it was in my office.
Never mind.
It was within arm's reach. And I felt like yelling rabble, rabble, rabble and swinging a hammer. And I know that effect is lost on radio. But still.
Mm-hmm. That it is. It's like those ads.
That was me
TV
hitting the microphone
up.
With a hammer.
It's like every time I hear an ad for a TV show on the radio, I'm always just amused by that. Tonight on The Flash, he's really fast. You're just going to have to take our word for it.
It's like the reverse of book trailers. Ever watch a book trailer?
Yes, I have.
It's like adventure, excitement. This is the one actor we could afford to go run through a field.
Or down a corridor.
Who looks just enough like the character for us to get the author to sign off on it. And then you get the ones where the author talks to you at the end of it, and you're just like, wow, this is more awkward. Book trailers.
Oh,
remember the Stephen King book commercials from like the 80s and 90s?
No, I honestly do not.
Oh, you should go look those up. They used to like air those constantly where you could like effectively sign up for the Stephen King book club. And they'd ship you a Stephen King book every month. In your first month, we'll send you The Stand by Stephen King. Yeah.
Well, so,
what were we talking about?
Well, Brian Fuller.
Talking about how we don't need to worry about Star Trek Discovery. It's going to be fine.
Oh, okay.
And we need to stop worrying every time Hollywood types make responsible career choices.
On the other hand, we also could all have hammers.
It's true. We could all have hammers.
I do have a hammer. Don't you want to be like me? I've got a hammer and a copy of Wonderfalls on DVD. Everything's coming up, Trey.
You, don't be like me. I'm in a basement and I have Rumble the Decepticon in my hand.
Oh.
All right. Hey, speaking of disappointments and replacing things.
Boy, it's been a rough week for the DC Cinematic Universe, guys. Of course, reports have come out that the Ben Affleck Batman movie script is not very good. Although we did have that really good Wonder Woman trailer, which is neat. But we also had really bad news that, unfortunately, the director of the Flash movie, Rick Famuyiwa, I believe has, we think that's how it's pronounced. We're very sorry if we mispronounced
it. We've only ever seen it written down, and we can't find any phonetic spellings, or at least we couldn't before the show.
But Rick Famuyiwa, director of the Flash movie, is director of the Flash movie no more. He has stepped down over creative differences. But it's not like he's really been on the project for that long, guys. He only got brought on back in June,
because
creative differences.
Because this may sound very similar to a story from back in May when Seth Cram Smith stepped down as director of the Flash movie.
The Flash is starting to lose
differences.
The Flash is keeping its directors about as well as Community keeps its peripheral cast.
Seasons.
I stand by my statement.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's... What is going on in the DC Cinematic Universe, guys? Because it hasn't been a great week for them. I think...
Here's the thing with the Flash, though. You're in a really weird position when it comes to the Flash. Because right now, when most people think of the Flash, the first thing that comes to mind is the Grant Gustin TV show.
Yeah,
as they should.
Phenomenal. And it's a very good show. And for better or for worse, people are working with that as a template. And DC is going to start trying to draw that as a template. And now you're stuck in a position where you're trying to make a Flash movie that is separate from another wildly successful version of the same character that you want to have existing concurrently. You want to have it be different, but you also want to have it be recognizably similar to the character they like from that show. That's why we have, from all of the footage that we've seen of Ezra Miller's Barry Allen, we have another young, jokey Barry Allen who's acting more like Wally West than Barry Allen, because that's what's successful on TV.
Hey, on TV we get two Wally Wests.
Mm-hmm. In the comics we have two Wally Wests, and neither of them are Barry Allen, though.
Well,
but that's
true.
Beside the point.
But, so, I think, on the upside, on the one hand, I do think that it has something to do with it, but I think the Flash is the one character, especially with the introduction of the multiverse as being an important plot element on the television show, with multiple versions of the people, like, existing. Like, the fact is, we're on our third Harrison Wells? Fourth if you count Thawne.
Fourth if you count Thawne, yeah.
It's, the TV show has primed fans to accept the multiverse and that there's another universe that the movies are taking place in. So that's actually, in my mind, really good, because it then works into the, like, it works with the continuity, not against it. The real challenge seems to be that there was, uh, it's It's an inherent problem with the DCEU right now, and that is directors are fighting against the tone that's been set by the studio. And and while, like, I'm not so worried about Wonder Woman because, like, that can still be, like, a hopeful... While we want it to be a hopeful film, it will be an action-packed film, which, you know, it's like Suicide Squad wasn't a good movie, per se, but it wasn't, like, depressing.
Right.
So
it wasn't awful.
Well, it would have been the worst comic book movie this year if it weren't for the fact that Batman vs. Superman came out. Suicide Squad only looks good because it's better than Batman vs. Superman. Let's not pretend anything else. while in action, like, it's apparently he really wanted to, like, go different in the tone than what the studio wanted, and so that's, and with Seth Graham Smith leaving before that as well, I think it's really they want to go lighter with Barry Allen than the studio wants to. And so I hope that, you know, I hope that they can work it out. Now, the real issue here is replacing the director on The Flash, which is supposed to be going into pre-production at this stage, totally derails the film. And The Flash is super important because it's going to be the first DCEU movie to come out after Justice League. Like,
yeah.
Whatever plots they're setting up, like, Wonder Woman is largely set prior to the earlier stuff, so it's not a big deal, but The Flash is going to take place after Justice League and, in theory, follow up on plot lines laid down in that film. And delaying that movie may affect the release schedule for literally every other subsequent film after that. That'll come and will require, if they can't release it before those other films, they're going to have to rework quite a bit more. And so that's that's really, really the big challenge. And that's the big challenge that Warner Brothers and DC Entertainment are going to have in front of them. And I think it's... I still just go back to the fact that, like, DC on television, with the exception of Gotham, is phenomenal right now. You know, be it the comics based off of their main line or off of their Vertigo stuff, because both iZombie and Lucifer have been really good.
I've been meaning to watch Lucifer.
Okay, Lucifer is not as good as iZombie, but it's enjoyable. I'll say that.
I like the character from the Vertigo books, though, so
right.
Want it to be good.
His personality is right, but they turned it into a cop procedural, so, I mean, let's just
that's kind of weird.
Ponder on, like, I mean, they did that to iZombie too, like, she's not solving crimes in the, everything's got to be a police procedural on television. It's I don't understand.
A police procedural or a medical show, or
it's either a police procedural or you've got the three-man team. The three-man team, this is my theory on bad science fiction shows. You'll find good science fiction shows that fit into this also, but a bad science fiction show needs three archetypes. There will be more characters in this, but you always need at least three. You need your hero, you need the flat love interest, who doesn't have a lot of personality, and then you need the suit, the administrator.
Right.
No, this is...
No, I know what you're doing.
Yeah, you look at 7 days, you've got Frank, who's the hero, you got Olga, who is the love interest, and you got two guys who play the suit role. You watch Invisible Man, you've got the hero, the Invisible Man, you've got the chief, who's the suit, and you've got the doctor, who's the love interest. You watch Time Cop, the series, you've got the hero, the suit, the love interest. You watch Brimstone, you've got the hero... You've got the suit, who is the devil in Brimstone, and you've got the love interest. So, they do a twist on that one in a later episode, but I won't spoil it for anyone who manages to somehow... Well, you'd have to illegally get a copy because there's no legal DVD release of Brimstone, which is just a crime. But no, so you either have to be a procedural, or you need the hero, the love interest, and the suit. And, a good science fiction series can subvert that. A good superhero show can subvert that. But those are your, if you want to be lazy and make a TV show. If Like, those are the no-effort TV show patterns. Police Procedural and The Three-Man Show.
Right.
Three-man shows often have the best friend and things like that also, but yeah.
I didn't mean to sound like I didn't believe you. In my head, I was kind of going through and be like, oh, right, oh, God.
Well, it's I wasn't necessarily trying to convince you, Nick, so much as explain my process to the audience.
Hmm. Roger, Dodger.
It's, yeah. The hero, Timeless subverts it because the hero's a woman, the army guy's the flat love interest, and then you've got the suit back at the headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
But I might be the only one here watching Timeless.
I've been meaning to watch it. I just never got around to it.
It's enjoyable, but
I'm bad at TV.
It's enjoyable, but it's a three-man show.
Gotcha. I might give it a shot eventually.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I have loved three-man shows. Like, Invisible Man is incredible, but it's lazy writing.
Gotcha. I've never even heard of Invisible Man.
The Invisible Man? It was ran 2 seasons on Sci-Fi Channel. It's on Hulu. You should watch it.
Maybe I'll look it up. Yeah,
oh, it's super enjoyable. It ran like when Farscape was on.
Okay.
It's about a guy who turns invisible.
You've never
watched Invisible Man? Oh, that is literally Krista's favorite show.
Huh. Yeah, I'll give it a shot. Yeah, if it's on Hulu, I can pull it up sometime.
Yeah, well, that's one of the shows that we're talking about doing for that other thing that I was talking about.
Right, I look forward to that then.
That we're not announcing yet, so don't worry about it. But yeah, so The Flash.
Yeah, it doesn't have a director anymore. They're looking for one.
If you would like to direct it, please don't make it a three-man show. I mean, they managed to... I mean, true, don't get me wrong, season one, The Flash, is a three-man show. Because
true.
You've got The Flash as the hero, you've got Harrison Wells as the suit, and you've got Iris as the flat love interest. She gets dimensions. Like, they stopped being a three-man show, but it started as a three-man show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
God, kind of so did Arrow, come to think of it.
Well, and don't get me wrong, Arrow, who was the suit?
I'd say, for season one, Diggle.
Yeah, no, but, you see, the suit's got to be an authority figure.
He was supposed to be an authority figure.
No, it's, you see, Diggle was always, like... See, you go back to season one, Arrow, and Stephen, like, the Oliver Queen did not, like take orders from Diggle.
That's true.
The Arrow was never a three-man show. Now, Supergirl had the first season. The second season, it hasn't been, but first season was in many ways a three-man show.
Mm-hmm.
With James as the love interest. It subverted it by, you know, inverted the genders, but with James as the love interest and Hank Henshaw as the suit.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again... This is not to say that the three-man show is a bad concept. Supergirl was tied for my favorite new series the year it came out when it was being
right.
A three-man show. It's the three-man show theory is merely a way to look at lazy writing, and a good three-man show stops being a three-man show at some point because the love interest stops being flat and the relationship between the hero and the suit will change. And, yeah, anyways... We should move on.
Oh,
we gotta.
Say, speaking
gotta
of speaking of cast dynamics and rather than three-man shows, ensemble pieces per se, and also speaking of Wally West to a painful, long-standing extent, we got news shortly before recording this episode.
This is hot and fresh out the oven. This is a breaking news story.
It was news that I didn't believe because my hopes have been dashed so many times in the last few years that I didn't want to believe that it was real because it seemed too good to be real. But lo and behold, sometimes wishes do come true. Sometimes campaigning on Twitter, buying home video releases and video games and... rewatching things on Netflix to give it better ratings, sometimes that pays off. What am I talking about? The long-standing campaign to bring back Cartoon Network's canceled All Too Soon series, Young Justice.
Yay.
It has been a long and ugly road for Young Justice. It debuted with relatively strong ratings on Cartoon Network. It got pushed to DC's god-awful time slot of being part of their DC Saturday morning time slot, which aired at somewhere around six in the freaking morning when their core demographic probably wasn't even awake yet. We were told that the toy sales weren't good enough, and I saw they did. Of course, toy sales aren't good enough when you only put the characters people want in limited numbers and put tons of Vandal Savage and Speedy, as he appeared for 5 minutes in the first episode, as most of your first wave. Of course, no one wants to buy those. They're not in the show.
Vandal Savage wasn't in the show?
Well, Vandal Savage was in the show, but his part was small. He is a major villain, but he's never really in the forefront. Like, you get to see that he is a major player, but it's never, like...
It's not like Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, it's not like Legends of Tomorrow where he was the main baddie. It's not, he menaces Wally West directly in one episode, and both of the season finales he plays a major role, but does not really directly confront the league or the team. They just keep kind of cutting back to him and Clarion and being like, yeah, these guys are up to something. Whereas, you know, really popular characters like Robin, Wally West, Kid Flash, Superboy, Artemis, yeah, I dare you to find toys of them because people liked them, so they disappeared quickly. So stores were filled with all these crappy shelf warmers because no one wanted Speedy as, again, in the way that he appeared in the first 5 minutes of the first episode and no other point after that. But anyway, it's been a long haul. People have been pushing for it. We finally got confirmation that Young Justice is going back into production. No word on what channel it's going to be on.
I would guess Netflix is probably going to.
Well, that's everyone's guess, but Warner Brothers hasn't announced any partners, and as of recording, mm-hmm. like for all we know that since we're releasing this episode Tuesday morning and recording Monday night, overnight maybe news will come out, but they may be trying to shop it around because other services
this?
Like Hulu might be interested.
Well, how about this? CW, put it in a morning slot. Put it on a weekend morning slot.
They don't really do Saturday morning cartoons anymore.
Why not?
No,
yeah. Why not try to bring block. It back? This would be a good time to do it.
Young Justice got killed because it was on Saturday mornings once. I'm not doing this again.
Yeah, no, I think the best odds for it to go on a streaming service, because really the reason why Young Justice got canceled is because its main viewers ended up being outside of the targeted toy demographic. The viewership that brought it back is not the young kids that they were initially targeting with the series, but the older teens and young adults. And so those people are going to be on the and also, frankly, even with the younger people, even with kids, fewer and fewer of them are watching live television. So it's the odds are a streaming service is going to be the destination since it went off Cartoon Network to begin with. Now, Netflix is the most likely destination only because they have the first two seasons, but that doesn't mean that they won't shop it around to everybody else. For all we know, they'll end up on CBS All Access.
I'll say this much, though, and I it struck me as I was saying this. 2016 has not been a great year. It's been a pretty ugly, terrible year, but you know what was one good thing that 2016 has been? This has been the year of Wally West. Ginger Wally has triumphantly returned to the comics. I didn't have to lose younger Wally to get Ginger Wally back.
Yeah, how great is that?
Which, by the way, the most recent issue of The Flash, where they where I got to see those two team up for a little bit, awesome sauce. Kid Flash made his live action debut on the TV show, and now I know that Young Justice is coming back, and maybe, just maybe, I might find out that Wally didn't meet a most horrible fate worse than death, then yes, yes, this is the year of Wally West, and I have something to be happy about, and you do too.
Love you, man.
This just it's been a rough year for as a Wally West. I mean, it's been a good year to be a Wally West fan, and not really a good year for much else. But
yeah, it's been a pretty garbage year.
Yes, it was a good year to get married, I think.
Yeah.
But
my brother-in-law's wedding was wonderful earlier this year. Yours is okay.
No. Oh, darn it. I liked mine.
Well, I'm glad because it was yours. I mean, it would be weird if you told me you didn't like yours. I'd actually be more worried if that was the case.
Mine was epic. But yeah, the year of Wally West, it's happening.
You did a whole hero's journey from beginning to the end of the ceremony. Of course it was epic. No, I was kidding.
But
Joseph Campbell jokes. They make it every time.
Jeez.
I love this show. I love being on this show. But yes, 2016, the year of Wally West. Young Justice is back. All that campaigning was worth it. So Young Justice fans, continue to support the official release. Let's bring this back big time. Let's get the let's look forward to finding out what happened to everybody.
Oh,
because I'm jazzed.
Well, Young Justice may be coming back, but not everything is coming when it should. In the world out there, you see, the Dark Tower has had probably one of the bumpiest, weirdest routes to the screen. The Stephen King's The Dark Tower series was supposed to first be adapted back in like 2005.
I think as far back as the 90s, it's been
development
hell. The year 2000.
Like, I remember in the mid-2000s, they were talking about trying to do, like, a weird combination movie and television series thing where they would release a movie and then a season of the TV series to take place between the movies. And then another, like, I think that was Ron Howard's idea. There have been many directors.
Ridiculous. No one would ever do that, trying to tie in a TV show to a series of movies.
You know, it's so much weird crap has been going on with the Dark Tower that, like, when we first found out that the movie was actually going to happen back in August of 2015, I didn't believe it until they actually, like, then started shooting. But while the film, like, has an amazing cast with Idris Elba they've actually completed filming, it actually looks like it might hit its February 2017 release date. Well, in a way that feels almost ironic or suitable, depending on how you look at it, that is no longer the case of a February 2017 release date. It, in fact, has now been delayed until July of 2017.
Weird.
July
28th. Yeah.
And the reason why that, from all reports, is that it's the special effects are delaying it. That they were not going to get them all done in time to get the February release out, and they had two choices. Either just take more time doing them, or throw a lot of money at the problem and hire more effects houses. And, you know, because, like, if you watch, like, Doctor Strange, there are, like, 10 effects houses that worked on that film. Since the Dark Tower only has a budget of $60 million, which, by the way, what?
I'll talk
about that in a moment, but they've decided to delay the film to get the post-production done. Holy cow, $60 million, which is, you know, like, it would sound like a lot of money if we were talking about, like, this film being made in 1993. Maybe they just wrote the budget down then and stuck with it. Like, $60 million is nothing for what is supposed to be an epic fantasy film. Like, and actually, that makes me more hopeful about the film than I was before. Because The Dark Tower is a weird series.
Yeah, I'm what I know about it, it just...
I mean, we're talking lobstrosities, man. We're talking a bear with a satellite dish on its head. There's weird stuff in there. And so if with a smaller budget, maybe they're being given the freedom to be just as weird as Stephen King's book. All I know is that I, like, based on what I know about the series and how it ends, I just know that if they ever finish this series, we're going to end up with more people angry than the ending of Lost. Like, it's going to be great. it's going to be great.
That sounds optimistic.
Stephen King was so high when he wrote this. I think at some point in the series, I'm not going to spoil it. I am what, like, there are so many weird things that happened in this series that I'm wondering if they're going to include them. Like, there's...
Dear producers of the Dark Tower, I humbly implore you to include all the weird stuff. Sincerely, Nick Izumi.
We like the weird stuff.
We do the weird stuff.
That is a Dr. Horrible reference.
Yeah,
Eddie's too late.
We don't get many of those these days.
It's been weirdly like running through my head, like the music from that show lately, and I don't understand why.
Because your head has good taste and straight to internet musicals, obviously. Yeah, I said it. Yeah. I'm not ashamed of it either.
Well, but I just want to point out that so. Like, if you want to know how effed up Stephen King was when he wrote The Dark Tower, there is a point in which Stephen King appears in The Dark Tower.
What? What?
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. It's,
Oh, glory.
Like, that's why I'm like... What is this gonna? What's it gonna do? Because Stephen King is so high. Was so high when he wrote this thing. He wrote himself writing the books into the books. About how he was channeling. Like, there's a Stephen King in the novels channeling the stuff that's happening to the main characters and writing it down in the books, in the Dark Tower books. And I think he sends, like at one point, like. They almost kill Stephen King in a car accident in the books. Like, that's... this is... The Dark Tower is going to start out, like, you know, with, like, the gunslinger and, like, be all, like, cool and fantasy western. And then it is going to go insane. And I just want to know, are they going to have Stephen King still being Stephen King in here? Or, for those parts, are they going to change it to, like, the Dark Tower movie production set?
Dear
like
God.
And replace it with the screenwriter and the director. Like, how are we going to address the metatextual elements of, like, is it going to be instead Idris Elba having to be saved? I really want to know how they're going to handle the metatextual elements of the Dark Tower. I
don't know how you're gonna do it.
Here's the thing: they're only spending $60 million, so that like sequel, like all they have to do is make like $80 million or $100 million, and a sequel's guaranteed, right? So
I guess so.
So like when I thought this was gonna be some big epic that they were gonna go spend $300 million on, I was like, it's gonna fail, and then we're never gonna get sequels, and we'll never have to get to the weird stuff. It'll be the Golden Compass all over again. And the crazy-ass stuff's never going to really come into major play. But now that I know that they're hardly spending any money on this movie, that they're pulling a Deadpool, that it's got a very... doesn't need to go that... it doesn't need to make that much money to be profitable. It just needs to make enough.
Uh-huh.
And we could get some crazy-ass banana shit on screen. And if it weren't for the fact that I think we'd get the wrong people Googling it, I would totally call this episode Crazy Ass Banana Shit.
Yeah, we don't want to do that. That's not a good sign thing.
God, the dark...
Oh, dear golly.
So, the Dark Tower is... So, July. July, and I think we can all wait till July. But now I want to see it more than ever, because now that I know that we might get more, because this thing only has to do moderately okay. This film doesn't have to be the tentpole. It can just be sort of okay, and we can get to the crazy ass banana shit stuff.
So few movies do, like, so few studios are willing to do that these days, you know, to just throw money at a few projects. Instead, they put tons of money at big projects, so maybe this is a good sign.
Yeah.
One way or another.
I'm going to find you.
In a stupid sort of way.
Get you. But Nick, take us to the wonderful world. Speaking of wizards.
Oh, yes. In the world of the wizards. No, this is our, I don't know how wonderful this is. So, we learned recently that, what the Wizard World, conventions are planning to do for 2017. They released their 2017, event dates, and, it's a little surprising. In the last couple of years, like this last year, they were doing 25 different events.
Well, 25 shows in 2015. Yeah.
Or excuse me. Yeah. And now this coming 2017 list is a little surprising because they only have 16 shows on this list.
Yeah.
They're downsizing quite a bit by almost 10.
2016, I think they ran 19.
Okay.
Like, it's been dropping, and this is all part of the fact that Wizard has been bleeding money.
Mm-hmm.
It's they went on this rapid expansion path, and I mean, honestly, it's like they had the disaster. Like, 2015 was just a total crap show for Wizard. They expanded too big, too fast. They tried to launch. They did their whole ConTV fiasco, which was a massive money loss.
They tried to put a convention on a boat.
Which they thankfully canceled before it happened. Although, I really, really, really wanted to know what... like, geek cruises work, where it's just like a geek cruise, but with some special guests, and you see some panels, but you're there for the cruise. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And you're just there with geeks. But a geek convention where you put, like, an artist alley on the boat. Like... Jesus Christ, we're like, oh my god,
ordering Jimmy John's would be really complicated.
I'm just saying, like, if I gotta spend $1,000 to go sell at an artist alley table, once you include the, like, table plus, like, cruise ticket, because it's not like you can, like, if I go vend at an expensive con, I can go crash at, like, my brother or my cousin's or my, you know, friend's house if I want to save money. You can't do that on a cruise ship. You know what I mean? Like, it is out of the dock. Like, oh, that cruise, that was a bad idea. Thank God they cut. But like, they had their CEO resign. They've had so much stuff, and so like, scrapping down and cutting not like the less profitable shows. I will say there's some stuff, like, I'm surprised to see Wizard World Minneapolis still on the list, because that show was apparently not really all that, like, successful, like, attendance wise from what I heard. Wizard World Madison has moved from being a spring convention to actually being to late September.
Yeesh.
Yeah, it's because they're now September 22nd through
24th. Yeah, this is a weird little schedule.
Yeah, it's so they've moved the Wisconsin show literally, like, to the opposite end of the year. It's, and with the Minneapolis show in May, it. I don't know. It, like, I mean, well, the Minneapolis show is still roughly where it was before, I think. Actually, I'm going to have to go look that up. I don't know if that feels right. Anyways, regardless, like, it's, I think there might be one more show that's not on this list, because I think they do Philadelphia twice a year, but, yeah, no, but 16 is all they've announced so far, and that's probably all that they will announce, at most one more show. And it's because what happened is that Wizard went out and saturated the market. It's the convention scene is pretty saturated in certain parts of the country. Let's not pretend otherwise. But
mm-hmm.
But these shows, Wizard World shows, don't attract the traditional convention goers. They attract people going, they're an autograph con, and so they attract people going specifically for the big celebrity who are going to go spend a lot of money on that autograph. Like, that's
right.
And they are pop culture events. I mean, honest, you know, it's Wizard World Chicago, their main show, their original show, their, you know, it's their big thing that brings in 70,000 people every year. And so the Chicago show is doing fine, but and it's the biggest con in the Midwest, but these are not crossover with the standard convention scene for the most part. We talk about them because we know that a lot of the people who listen to our show are also vendors and artists at conventions. And so I know some of you do Wizard World shows whenever you're feeling insane and feel like spending $300 on an Artist Alley table. But their prices are ridiculous. it's like, it, but what happens is, though, is like, say you launch, like, you know, if like the Madison show, I'm surprised, kind of surprised it's still happening, especially since they've moved it to proximity to the Chicago show. When the Madison show was in the spring, I understood it a little because it was far away on the calendar from the Chicago show. But the fact is that people who live, I mean, although that did put it in proximity to C2E2, in the timing and their old dates. But the fact is that, you know, people who live in Madison can easily drive to Chicago. And so what happens is when they start adding too many shows close together, they start cannibalizing their own market. You know, there's a limited number of people who want to go to an autograph con. And Wizard isn't the only player in that market. But the fact is that they went into so many markets that they were effectively eating their own, like, customer base. Like, they were cannibalizing their own customer base. They weren't finding new customers for these new conventions. They were finding the customers they already had, only raising their own costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeesh.
Because when your only competitor is yourself, you don't want to beat the competition.
It is crazy that they didn't think about this, and I that has bothered me since I started here. That has bothered me for a while. I'm like, geez.
Well, you know, it was, you know, it's obviously, you know, it was bad enough where the CEO resigned. You know, it's,
that's true.
Somebody noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But, you know, it's Wizard, you know, the American style Comic Con is a thing, and Wizard World is, you know, they're not the only exporter of it, but they are, you know, they're not the only. Oh, that's the whole thing, is that they used to, they've cut all their international shows.
Ooh.
You know, Wizard World had been trying to do stuff outside of the country, and now they've scaled back to just the domestic stuff. Like, those 25 shows included shows in other countries, and now their list of the 16 are all within the continental United States, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't double check to make sure there weren't anything in, like, Hawaii. No, all continental United States.
Well, so Wizard World hurting a little bit, and they're trying to,
presumably, anyway.
But, you know, Wizard World may not be trying to export the American Comic-Con to other countries anymore. You know, other people are.
Indeed.
Yes. Of course, one of the big things that we see every year is the San Diego Comic-Con here in America. And it's arguably, I would say, probably the biggest convention in the entire country as it goes with pop culture. There's industry people. I mean, everybody goes to this. Well, San Diego Comic-Con and its owner, and I'm blanking on the name of the...
No, that is wrong in so many stories.
Wrong? I'm reading the wrong story here.
No, you are reading the right story, but you are reading a mistake made in one article that then got distributed to every other article. The owners of Silicon Valley Comic-Con, not San Diego Comic-Con.
That's what it is. Yeah, sorry. Excuse me. Let's get back on track here. Silicon Valley Comic-Con, the owners of that, are kicking off the Tokyo Comic-Con in December, and they're expecting a lot of attendees. Of course, it's in Tokyo, a very heavily populated city
They're expecting a huge turnout full of cosplayers and industry people and all that other great stuff. And a couple of weeks ago, it was a very, very confusing rule that was posted. It has since been redacted, but a couple of weeks ago, it was announced in part of the rules that men would not be able to crossplay, that is, dress up in women's clothing, or women's, I'm putting women's clothing in quotation marks here, because what is that, but...
men would not be allowed to dress up as characters who are canonically female.
That's correct. So you wouldn't be able to really see men wearing dresses or anything like that, however the female characters would dress. Needless to say, there was a lot of outrage in that, because not only is that incredibly awful and whatnot, but it only applied to men. There was nothing that said women can't dress in, you know, canonically men's characters' outfits or anything like that. It was just the men that can't do that for women.
You can just say crossplay. It's easier.
Crossplay, yeah. Basically, the rule was men couldn't crossplay, women can. And everybody was understandably and justifiably upset at that. Well, since then, Silicon Valley Comic Con, the owners of that have said, no, we're not going to let that happen at Tokyo Comic Con.
Yeah. So we should talk about why this is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Weird. It's weird that it's 2016 and this is an issue.
But we should talk about why it's being discussed. This has actually been an ongoing issue in Japanese conventions for a long time, where there's this ban on men cross-playing as women characters. And it's been discussed ad nauseum, and it's a really complicated issue. And for the most part, what it comes down to is a bunch of people... it is in many ways transphobic, but it's about, you know, worried about, you know, overweight guys dressing as women to be funny, and them they're afraid of being seen as being low class, to put it bluntly. Now, is it again inherently a transphobic policy and wrong? Yes, but honestly, if it was just any other Japanese convention doing this, we'd all go, oh, another one, and it wouldn't be news. The reason why this was news was because Tokyo Comic Con is specifically an American-owned convention that applied this policy as well. And Tokyo Comic Con's whole big thing is that they are bringing an American-style convention to Japan, because obviously Japan's had a long-running convention culture that, you know, is...
That's very different from
our convention. Very different from our own. So the reason why it's a big hubbub is because it's an American company that went to Japan and implemented this transphobic policy as well, when in theory, you know, we should be trying to set the same example. Now, the one thing that I'm confused as to why I didn't get more press is who the owner of Silicon Valley Comic Con is. And as far as anyone's been able to tell, the owner of Silicon Valley Comic Con is still Steve Wozniak.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Co-founder of Apple Computers, Steve Wozniak.
Oh.
You didn't read the article on the site, did you?
he just read the sources. Now, like a lot of these, so what happened was that, and this is driving me nuts, and this is called bad journalism on the internet, is that Anime News Network made a mistake. Anime News Network said the show was being run by San Diego Comic-Con. Now, this is not true. They are in no way associated with Comic-Con International. And while Anime News Network has since gone back and corrected their original post to state that, for a long time, they had that up. And then all of these other news, like all these other blogs, picked that up without actually researching it. Now, I was, you know, aware. Like, I actually went and, you know, I don't write anything without doing research myself. And so our story has always been correct, and stating that Comic-Con International has nothing to do with Tokyo Comic-Con, and that Silicon Valley Comic-Con, because if you Google Tokyo Comic-Con announcement, you will find Silicon Valley Comic-Con's official announcement of the convention that they are running it. And Silicon Valley Comic-Con was the brainchild of Steve Wozniak, and was also helped run by Stan Lee's organization. And Stan Lee is considered to be the co-organizer of Silicon Valley Comic-Con. Now, No, he's appearing at Tokyo Comic Con. I'm not sure how much his people are actually organizing it, but Steve Wozniak is for sure involved in both of these projects. And so that's why it's a big deal that Steve Wozniak, of all people, his company was implementing a transphobic policy, even if it was the cultural norm for the area. It's still like we should be looking to elevate that culture, not, you know, if we're an American company coming in and do better, you know. Japanese convention culture has got some massive issues, and it's easy to forget as the American convention culture, at least, is trying to be more progressive, and it has a long way to go, and there are obviously still bad actors aplenty in the American convention scene. Convention organizers over the course of the last, you know, half dozen years have been attempting to correct the issues in the American convention scene, and the fact is, it's easy to forget that just because progress is being made here, that it isn't necessarily being made elsewhere. I have opinions.
It's cool.
Oh, so thankfully Tokyo Comic Con has, you know, reversed that policy. So yay, high fives all around. And really, this is what I think happened. I think what happened is that local staff put together the cosplay policies. Obviously, you know, with an international event like this, they've got local people on the ground, and some local people in Tokyo who were putting together the cosplay rules just cut and paste the standard set of stuff at every other convention they'd ever worked, and it got passed through, you know, and that's it. And so it got brought to the attention of the masses, and it got corrected, but, you know, it's just what happens. Now, while I talk about American convention scene trying to be better,
darn it.
Okay, so hat tip to Jeff Hartz for this one, listener Jeff Hartz for this one, but
yeah, let's get into this conversation.
So, literally, like, a couple weeks ago at Super Megafest Comic Con, actor Ray Park was appearing as a guest. Ray Park, like, of course, being well known for his appearance as, in The Phantom Menace. You know, porny Darth Maul guy. And, of course, being Toad in the first X-Men movie.
Along with being the ninja on a zip line from G.I. Joe Retaliation.
he was appearing as a guest at the convention, and apparently on Saturday night was spotted in the bar by quite a few people. And I've talked to some people who were present, but the Saturday night of the convention, Ray Park allegedly assaulted a woman. Now, he was questioned by police. Park was questioned by police, and then afterwards returned to the convention to complete his obligation as a guest. Now, he was not arrested. Some people have reported that he was arrested. Ray Park was not arrested. And initial reports, like, all talked about how no violence was witnessed, but it's really clear that that's not the type of assault being talked about. John Hebert, who was also appearing at the convention, posted on Facebook, so keep your ears open, folks. One of the celebrities from the convention that I appeared at this weekend took two arrests there. Again, not arrested, but at least one for sexual assault. Saturday night, he was seen being overly handsy with some women. We don't know if it was more than one woman he was handsy with. We do not know the nature of consent in any of these situations. We do not know, you know, obviously any of the people involved, but the fact is it's really clear that that's what he's being accused of.
Okay.
And, you know, that's a thing.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Nasty stuff, I mean, but also so little to, I don't know. I just don't even know. That's,
yeah, it's
ugly.
Well, I mean,
at the very least, he was cooperative and worked with people. So it's not like we have somebody who's saying, "Oh, how dare they say this about me?" Blah blah blah. It's an uncomfortable situation for everybody involved, but at least it's being handled correctly.
Yeah, it's like, again, we should point out that he's been convicted of no crime. We don't know all the details, but I will say that the odds of someone bothering to accuse him and something not having happened are actually fairly low. I'm not going to invite Ray Park to a convention I run. I'm just going to say
I'm not either.
That's fair.
Well, we all only run one convention, guys. So, it's gross.
Yeah, it's just another.
Everything
just another
is terrible.
Don't
assault people, guys. It's not hard. Listen, men. Fellow cisgendered men, gather in here, okay? Seriously, it's not hard to ask whomever it is that you're interested in, hey, what do you feel like doing? It's not hard to ask for consent.
Yeah.
I'd say that goes to everybody. It's not just to cisgendered men. It's to everyone. Learn consent. Yeah. It's
super easy.
It happens. It's just exactly. It's a yes or no thing. There's no between the lines. No is no.
Sometimes the yes response can be really fun and exciting. So, you know, get the yes response if they want that. Don't just assume.
All right. So. Let us move into happier pastures and into the mailbag.
Yeah, let's dig into the mailbag and see what we got here.
Look at that.
Mailbag, look at that.
Is that our theme song for the mailbag?
I don't know. I figure I'm going to come up with a new mailbag jingle every episode.
I'd say go for it. Anyways, we have a letter, of course, from Langland this week.
I thought we were
going to
start with core fans.
Yeah, I guess we are starting with core fans. Okay.
First up, we got one from our old buddy, Corfan, with the subject of WhatCon/the Indoor Sports Center.
Following up on a story from last episode.
Mm-hmm, where I went to WhatCon at the Rockford Indoor Sports Center. And the message reads, "The Indoor Sports Center in Rockford has been configured to run soccer in the west half of the building and league volleyball in the east half, where roller derby is also played. The Rockford Park District made the decision to convert the building to all soccer, so that's why they have installed AstroTurf. Well, now I have an answer to that question. It still is terrible, but at least I know why. Unless you play soccer, in which case I guess it's pretty awesome. So, go soccer."
When I grew up, we played indoor soccer on a gym. And we liked
Historically, RockCon was a small gaming convention owned by Blackhawk Distribution, a local game distributor, but they changed hands a few times over the last decade or two, and if WhatCon is using the old spelling, I imagine they've made some kind of arrangement with Blackhawk if they still exist. Okay, well, that was useful in learning about the Rockford Indoor Sports Center and the history of small conventions in the area. So, thanks for that, Corfan.
You learn something new every day. All right, next we got a letter from Langland, and Langland writes to us. He says, "And the subject, commence operation, pigs go oink oink. Hey, you guys. So I checked out the Doctor Strange movie. Well, I love it a lot. It was really cool to watch. I was never bored at all with this movie, and I was able to follow it fairly well, despite the fact that some people don't fully understand it. Stanley's cameo, once again, was excellent. I must say that Phase 3 is definitely leading into something quite epic. I can't wait for Thor's third movie now, as well as other movies planned, too. With that said, I loved all the special effects. The Inception-like effects were a little bit trippy,
and it really felt like an acid trip or something, but that still made the movie great. So overall, I give this movie A+. That's all I got. I wish I had some stupid question to ask, but I don't. So once again, buy American and make love, not war. Peace out, your friendly neighborhood pal, Langland. Light cigarette, walk outdoor.
Oh, that was weird. Shoulder.
Oh, God, that was...
that was really weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was a bit we just did. So I saw Doctor Strange.
I have not.
It's good.
Me either.
I'm confused that people weren't able to follow it. I don't understand that reference. Maybe
I have no idea, maybe people
went with couldn't follow it. It's pretty easy to follow. I will say it is an enjoyable Marvel film. It ties into the other Marvel stuff way more than I thought it would. Not in the sense that you have to know it to watch this film, but so that it will set up things in other films.
I'm glad that it's acid trippy, because if you look at old Doctor Strange comics, that's the only way I would describe half of them.
The problem is that, you know, I know very few things about Doctor Strange, but like I know who certain characters are, like Mordo. So I had to not be surprised by certain things.
Gotcha.
But to be fair, like they don't rely on anything like that for this film. I think it sets up everything really well, and it's actually really enjoyable. And surprisingly, Benedict Cumberbatch's American accent only bugged me a little. I think he was really well cast as Doctor Strange, considering that he's supposed to be like an arrogant surgeon, and Benedict Cumberbatch does arrogant really well.
Mm-hmm.
So he does an arrogant that's likable really well.
I can see that.
And so I think that is by far the most important thing, because regardless of what the Sorcerer Supreme is like in the comics, he's a surgeon, and in real life, surgeons are arrogant tool bags.
I hope you don't need any major surgery.
Oh, no, look, I'm perfectly fine if someone's an arrogant tool bag and they operate on me as long as they get the job done. It just means I don't want to go hang out with them afterwards. And honest to God, they're such arrogant tool bags, they don't want to hang out with me afterwards either. It works out for everybody. Like we all go home and have a good time, man. They don't want to meet me. You don't really meet your surgeon.
Well, you do before the surgery.
Briefly, and he wants to get out of the room, or he or she wants to get out of the room as quickly as possible. That's what Scrubs taught me. I watched Scrubs. That's how I know that.
Yes, Scrubs, the most realistic medical drama of our time.
Actually, arguably, some doctors have said it is.
Yeah, it.
And they had actual doctors working on the show, so.
That's good.
Okay, but we should move on then. To the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. Our last bit of the show is always the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. For those of you who don't know, that is the point where I, Trey Dorn, read a bit of a book, and the challenge to you is to guess what book it is. Now, I know you have the following questions. One, why is it called the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge? And to that, I say go listen to, like, episode, like, 5 or something. I think that's probably where it's a thing. He's a guy. Anyways, I just got into a fight with him on Facebook. Who cares? Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The second question is, what do we get if I guess the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge? Well, you get included in the Hall of Awesome, and the benefits of the Hall of Awesome are that you get your name read aloud on every episode, and that you get your name listed on our website. And that's it. It's just a fun game. It's fun for the whole family. Go scour the library. And the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkham Eye Zero, Ren and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless to Talk with the Rambling Ramble. Okay, that's the first time I've screwed it up. We're going to try it again. Arkham Eye Zero, Ren and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless to Talk with the Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. can't believe I screwed that up the first time. Anyways, and now to continue the book that we started a little while ago, I'm going to read yet another line. The man grinned and winked. If you know a book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form and tell us. Or if you have anything else you'd like to tell us, think about, thought, pondered in your head, looked at on the wall, screaming into the endless abyss that is your existence and life, just go ahead and tell us there too. We'd like to hear it. Either we just want to know, or we need to be cheered up as the world spirals into a hellscape that we were unprepared for.
Maybe it'll be less hellish on Wednesday, though.
Or worse.
Or worse. I like to be optimistic.
Either way, regardless of who wins or loses, there's going to be a run on bottled water on the Wednesday.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, boy. Anyways. All right.
It's
yeah,
just whether
well,
or not it will be useful or not. I found it working by iodine tablets on Amazon.
Well, that's good. We might need that. This is getting really dark. I want to get out of here.
Get
all
us
right.
out of here, Nick.
You know that our end theme lyrics are about a nuclear apocalypse, right?
Yeah,
no,
I do.
It's about a guy wanting a phone.
No, it's the song is about a nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah, and he wants someone to sell him a phone or buy him a home or something about a gnome. I don't know.
But Nick, who were we?
We are Nerd and Ty, trying to avert the nuclear apocalypse. We got... Say it, Trey.
I'm Trey Dorn.
I'm Firsters.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
And remember, you can subscribe to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or on any RSS reader. And you should rate and review us on Stitcher and iTunes and tell everybody how much you love us and how much your battle pants are working out for you. Battle pants. The best pants to battle.
Mm. Wait, you fight the pants?
Yes.
I hope you all voted. And I hope you all voted correctly.
Unless you have Please terrible vote. Opinions, then stay home.
Oh, dear. Keep on spocking in the free world.